Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, sir. Cutest music up. Hey, what's up? This is H2G Radio back for another broadcast. It's your host, Ricky Rivers. I got my guy, Eddie Burgos. You out there?
Yo, what's up?
Got my man, Jared Rudolph. You on the line with us?
Yes, sir.
All right, man. It's three amigos, man, giving it to you. Giving you that sports rap the way we like to bring it to you. I guess the story to talk about to start off with is Golden State, right? I mean, when can you not stop talking about Golden State?
They're definitely rolling right now.
They hooping to, you know, last night they won. They beat the 76ers. I mean, I don't think anybody had them to lose that one at home. Tonight they're at home again. I mean, actually, on Sunday they won, but tonight they're at home again. They're playing against
the Celtics.
Is it Washington?
No. Yeah, it is Washington. My fault.
Yeah, they're playing against Washington tonight. What's the spread on that game? Who you like in that game, Jared?
Well, I'm not picking anybody, over Golden State right now. You know, outside of maybe a San Antonio. You're looking at a team that came in with something to prove, but throughout the season that changed. And, you know, they've embraced being champions like, you know, no other team we've seen outside of the Chicago Bulls and really, really taking it, really taking it serious and, you know, just throttling people. So, outside of San Antonio, I don't see anyone. You know, maybe Oklahoma City can make things interesting, but I'm not picking anybody against those guys.
So basically, you're saying that they could probably win 76, 75 games. You think they go 75 games?
I think they'll win 73, and then maybe they'll pull the guys back. You know, 72 is a record. They break the record, and, you know, at that point now, it's up to them to win 16 more to make it really, really matter. But, it's 73, and then they shut it down. There's no reason for them to – You know, if they don't win the next six, if they don't win 16 during the playoffs, then, you know, 73 doesn't make a difference. Remember, Dallas had a good year the year that Dirk won the MVP. I think they won 66, 67 games. They lost in the first round of the playoffs. So you got to be real careful as you enter. Now, I don't think that's what's good in front of Golden State. Still, regular season is great. You know, Steph will win MVP. He should be considered for most improved player. They'll break the record. But if you don't win the 16, then it doesn't matter. You win the 16, breaking the record. Now you're talking about them as arguably the best single-season team of all time. They're in that discussion. So, you know, that's what has to happen. So 73, you know, plus the title. And then you start talking about them in a way that you can't talk about in many other teams.
Yeah, I happen to – my magic number, again, if you remember, was 74. And I think they're headed that in that direction for 74. When I look at them, I believe they haven't lost. I don't think they've lost a home game this season.
So, they have to go 7-2 in their last 9 games.
Yeah, they haven't lost a home game their regular season. Most of their games coming up are at home, except they play Utah Jazz away, they play Memphis away, and they play San Antonio away. So those three games are their only away games, and you figure Memphis and Utah are easy ones. I'm not going to say easy, but it's very possible. The only challenge could be San Antonio, and that San Antonio game is April 10th. So who knows? San Antonio could be packing it up and resting their guys at that time.
Nah, I totally agree with Jared, though. I definitely think, I totally agree. You know, they're going to get 74. They'll win 73, and then I think they're just going to rest the guys right after that.
Okay. My magic number is 74. I think they can rest those guys, and those backup guys can still perform at a level to carry them through. I mean, you know, their last game is a home game against Memphis, which they'll be playing in a home-and-home. I kind of feel like they can get those guys too, man. So, but we'll see. I think either way, they've been a joy to watch this entire season.
I totally agree.
The one interesting thing I heard in the commentary of tonight's game is that the Cavaliers are playing as if they won the championship last year, and Golden State is playing as if they lost it. Two different.
Yeah, I wouldn't say all that. I mean, look, man. said it last week on the show. LeBron James is a great player, okay? And he may go down as the greatest player of his generation because I don't think that people will stick Steph in LeBron's generation. I don't think Kobe, you know, I don't think Kobe, Shaq, you know, Duncan, I don't think those guys will be in LeBron's generation. And, you know, LeBron will represent the post-Kobe, you know, Duncan era. But he's not the end-all, be-all to winning championships, okay? So, you know, this idea that you put LeBron on a team and they're going to automatically win or win 70 games or do the things that the team, the Warriors put together are doing, you know, it's a misnomer. It's just not there. So they're having another great year. You know, they'll win, they'll get close to 60, and they'll make a strong run in the playoffs. But he's just not that guy. He's not the gatekeeper to the title. He's the gatekeeper to the trip to the finals through the East, but not to the title. So, you know, they can't play like they've won the championship. They're playing the best they can. You know, Ty Lue's a great guy. I think he's 2 to 3 years away from being the great coach that we all know that he can be. I think they made a bad coaching decision with David Blatt. And I don't think that the pieces that they have in place fit. You know, you got some individual talent there that makes it work in any Eastern Conference. But outside of that, no, this is not a team playing like they won the championship. If anything, this is a team that's playing like they're pretty sure that they can't win the title, but they know that they're good enough to do a few things. So, no, I don't see that. LeBron, he's great, but he's not the gatekeeper to winning titles, man. It doesn't go through LeBron. And you just see that. You see that when Cleveland plays. I know everybody wants him to be the second coming of somebody, of Jordan or Kobe or somebody else. It's just not who he is.
Well, one of the things I think is, what do you think about the whole situation? You know, the video just came out when he was talking to when they played Miami, and he whispered into D-Wade's ear, like, if this situation doesn't work out, I'll be back in Miami. Like, one, what does that say about LeBron doing that? And obviously we have Howard Beck coming on later talking about what he wrote up about, you know, the show on Bleacher Report.
Look, man, the guy, like I told you before, he has every right to take a better job. Here's the two things that stick out. One, even if he goes back to Miami, it doesn't mean he's going to win a championship. So that's one. Two, if he decides that Cleveland, he went back to Cleveland, he tried 2 years. Let's say they get back to the finals, you know, again this year, and they lose. He's brought them to the finals 2 times. Couldn't get it done. He's free to walk. He walks. There's nothing wrong with that. And he did his job. So I know people will be upset because they feel like that he owes them something for some odd reason. But, no, now look, there's a better way to handle things. And I think that's the issue that people have with LeBron. Whether it's the decision or, you know, the letter with Lee Jenkins, which I thought was cool. Everybody kind of had an idea he was going back. I thought he was crazy to go back to Cleveland. I thought he should have stayed in Miami. But, again, he's a man that has earned the right to do whatever he wants to do. And people don't have to agree with it, but I can get where people would be upset in the way that it's going on, because it's like if you're saying this now to Dwayne, it's like you're conceding – the season, or you're conceding the result already, and you've already made plans to bolt. And I'm not a fan of that type of thinking. You know, I'm all for do everything that you can do to try to win, and you deal with the off season, you deal with the options that you have once the season is over. And you can't be as great as he is if you're sidetracking your thinking. So I think he'll do exactly that, but he has to understand that, yeah, he has the right to do whatever he want to do, but just have a little bit of, you know, common courtesy in class about the way you go about doing it. Maybe he didn't know the mic was on him and no one would hear him, but, you know, people get upset in the way he goes about doing things, and, you know, you might want to watch that. I mean, you do have the emotions of this city, you know, hanging on whatever's going on. You're not responsible for it, but, you know, they are there, so you might want to be cognizant of that as you make your moves.
Hey, he's not responsible for the city. He kind of anointed himself the king. I guess the media did. He followed it through. He's been a part of who he is. And there's certain things I think that you just shouldn't do. That shouldn't even be your concentration, your thought. There shouldn't be in the things that you're thinking about in your quest for a championship. Your goal was to bring a championship to the land, to the city of Cleveland. All these thoughts about going back and backpedaling, going back to Miami in the middle of the season, in the design that he created. He's the one that put some of these pieces in place there at Cleveland. I just think is I think from someone of his caliber, someone who's the face of the NBA, it should not be happening at this juncture in the season. He should not have this type of cloud over his head. So,
well, he doesn't he's going to have a cloud regardless of what he does, man. If he does, people don't mind LeBron James being the king and all whatever else you want to call him, but they want him to be the king the way they see fit for him to be the king. And that's not cool. Now, he's not always going to make the right decision by everybody else's account, but it is his decision. And to a man, all you can do is respect that. Now, look, I believe that you should go about doing things with a little bit more consideration for the fans. But I don't think that you should make your decision based on what they need or want. Okay? He's done his job. If his goal is to bring a championship back to Cleveland and he fails while making a legitimate attempt, then you can't knock the guy for it. He ran into a team that was better than him twice. I mean, what are you going to do?
You lose it.
He's not cheating the game. He's not cheating the fans, because this is the best basketball Cleveland has experienced is when he's there. So he's doing his job, and that's what it is. It's a job. Like, you know, can't stress that point
enough. It's more
than a
job, man. Sports, I understand it's a job.
No, it's not more than a job. It's a job. It's his job.
Nah,
we make it more than what it is, but it's a job.
As sports, I don't think you can kind of equate it to a job that we kind of walk into on a day to day from a 9 to 5. It's not that.
No, it's maybe different than the job we work, but working at Best Buy is different than working for the railroad. He has a job. This is his job. Everyone that works for the NBA is an employee. Independent contractor. He has a job.
Okay. I understand your philosophy. Yes, technically his job. LeBron has become a corporation within himself as a result of that job.
No doubt about it.
LeBron's decision, he has kind of re-energized an entire economy in Cleveland, LeBron has. So some of the decisions that he's making, I think he's put that on his back. He's put the city, he understands who he is. I've been in the room with him. He understands who he is. Some of those decisions that he makes, he has to take responsibility for it. So if the media is watching everything he says and does, that's what comes with it. And I just think he just needs to make better choices about that stuff. And I don't think he can go from city to city and back and forth as part of his legacy, and his legacy stays intact because he did what was right for him at the time. I don't believe it is your legacy when you want to be on the Mount Rushmores of the folks that played, and you actually put yourself there, if you belong there with some of the decisions that he makes.
Well, I mean, the decisions
Pete Rose is not in the Hall of Fame. And I'm not trying to say
Pete Rose is not in the Hall of Fame because he gambled. If it came down to his performance, he'd be there.
Right.
What does that got to do with LeBron?
Because it's about decisions, and I think that's the point I was trying to make. It's about the choices that Pete Rose made. It's about the choice. I'm not saying he's a gambler. I'm not saying he's that serious. All I'm saying is LeBron can taint his legacy by the choices that he makes.
I don't know about that one, brother. I'm sorry, I can't. Look, he's not cheating the game. He's not cheating the fans, and he's successful generally every place he goes. The reason LeBron's not going to be on the Mount Rushmore of NBA greats is because he ain't win enough. Okay, he hasn't won more than Kobe, Shaq, Duncan. Okay, he hasn't won more than Jordan, Magic, Bird. He's not more important than Dr. J in terms of legitimizing the ABA-NBA merger. Why the hell would he be on the Mount Rushmore? I mean, any decision he makes, that's not keeping him up. The fact that he can't beat Dirk when he has Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. The fact that he can't beat Tim Duncan and the Spurs when he has those two plus Ray Allen. Like, that's why he's not on the Mount Rushmore. It has nothing to do with any decision that he made. The decisions, in hindsight, were the right ones. He won two championships. He got back to the finals. He made the right decisions. He made the decisions that everyone wanted him to make. Like, people think that it's so noble to sit around and get your ass kicked for the love of the fans. These are the same fans that will turn on you if you're not winning. So, no, he has to do what's best for him. You get one shot at this NBA career thing, one. And he's done well in terms of turning himself into something that's bigger than the basketball. He's used that game to create a lifestyle and earn a potential for himself that is unthinkable when you think about where he came from. And you tip your hat to that, okay? His responsibility is to play hard and be his responsibility is to play hard and fill the job description of what it is that he required of him, and he's done that, okay? He doesn't have to sit in Cleveland because it makes the fans feel better to sit in Cleveland if there are championships for him someplace else. It is a job. Ain't going to mess up his legacy. What messes up his legacy if he sits around in Cleveland when he can have gone someplace else and Steph Curry runs off two or three on him? Then that's dumb.
Well, I don't know if he's capable of stopping the Steph Curry train if he stays in Cleveland or if he goes to Miami. I'm not sure if he can stop the Steph Curry train. The Steph Curry train is already running. It's already arrived in the station. And I'm not sure if LeBron is even the face of the NBA at this point right now. I think it's Steph Curry's league. I think it's Steph Curry's league.
I mean, he's the reigning MVP. You could say that. Yeah, you can make a legitimate argument.
I think he's going to be the. I don't think there's any doubt he's going to be the two-time MVP.
Yeah, but again, LeBron is great. LeBron is LeBron. But when you look at the appeal and everything people said about him, you know, triple-double machine and, you know, score and do so many things. He doesn't even get the most triple-doubles in the league anymore. I mean, it's just like he is what he is. He is what he is, man. Great player. And, you know, when he was on top and the league was his, he did some incredible things. I don't think he was ever the most talented player. I think he had a body and a skill set that made him unguardable for a while, but he was never better in terms of, you know, being fundamentally sound than Kobe or Duncan. Like, he was never that guy. He had Grant Hill's game and Karl Malone's body, you know, a little bit faster. You know, that was the appeal of LeBron, but, I mean, look, can't take anything away from the guy, but, you know, saying that he can't, like, if he decides to leave Cleveland and put himself in a better situation, that it's going to taint his legacy. No, it's going to piss people in Cleveland off, but in terms of his legacy, at the end of the day, you read his resume. You'll see a certain amount of titles, a certain amount of MVPs, a certain amount of final appearances, points, rebounds, assists. That's what's going to determine his legacy. The fact that he went from Miami to Cleveland and maybe he goes back to Miami or any place else is not going to keep him off of Mount Rushmore. What's going to keep him off of Mount Rushmore is Steph, Dirk, Duncan. He lost to Duncan twice. That's what's going to keep him off of Mount Rushmore. Kobe can't say the same. If they put Kobe on Mount Rushmore, he can say he handled his business. I mean, was he 5-2 in the NBA Finals? You know, that's what puts you on Mount Rushmore, man. What puts you on Mount Rushmore is not taking hits for the betterment of the fans. These fans are turning. You saw they was burning that man's jersey as if he went there and didn't get them to the NBA Finals, as he went there and underachieved. No, all he did was take that franchise further than they have ever been before. And when he decided he wanted to do something different for himself, they burned his jersey. These are the fans that he's supposed to now sacrifice championships for, the same damn fans that if he leaves, going to burn his jersey again. Those people, get out of here.
Well, then he should have thought about that in his return trip. But let's think about that.
Hold up. On the return where the team that had the first pick in the draft, a draft that is based on your record in a lottery, the team that had the first pick twice, that team that he came back in his first year, took him to the NBA Finals, and his second year has them poised for another trip, that team, give me a break, man.
Hey, look, all I'm saying is that the argument about the burnt jersey and the Cavs fans should be history once LeBron decided to return at his own – not that he was traded. He made a decision to return back to the city. So he returned back to those fans, and he had a plan and a goal for them. So if he leaves and kind of doesn't – because it didn't happen at the pace that he wants it to, if he leaves it, then I'm just not – to me, I just feel like – his legacy becomes a little tainted in my eyes. But let's just look at this. We talked about LeBron. They're still the number one team in the East. Is there any team in the East that can challenge them from getting to the NBA Finals this year?
Toronto.
Is it the Raptors?
Toronto can make things interesting. But
is the Raptors
legit? They're legit. But I don't think that they're built to beat Cleveland. It's like all those times when people were talking about Kevin Durant and, you know, whether Kevin Durant would pass LeBron or anything else, you know, Oklahoma City was a great team. They just weren't a team that was going to beat Miami. They weren't built for that. So, yeah, Toronto's tough. They're a tough team, but they're not going to beat Cleveland. They're not built for that. They're still relatively young, you know. And look, the East, while record-wise, They look a little bit better than the West this year. I mean, all of the teams that are qualified for the playoffs right now have a winning record where, you know, you have a couple of teams in the West, Utah and Houston as of right now. Utah's at 500. Houston's a couple of games under 500. Looks like they're going to lose to Cleveland tonight. You know, it kind of changes the dynamic. But the West is still the tougher, you know, tougher conference.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, they're legit for what they are, and I think they'll push Cleveland. But beat them, nah, it'll be a tough five-game series, maybe six. You know, this is about it. They don't have the pieces.
Yeah, even though they're not playing as well, I think they are poised and prepared for a playoff run. And they know that this ultimately is the second season that's the most important. As you can see that LeBron's starting to get some more rest now, getting prepared for April. And that's when the second season, that's when things get a lot interesting, man. I happen to feel like Cleveland should have no problems getting back to the East, into the finals. But before we go any further, I believe we have Howard Beck on the line with us. Howard Beck, you there?
I'm here.
Hey, man, we're talking about LeBron. We've done a lot of talk about LeBron, and you're no stranger to covering LeBron. And I know you covered that story in terms of him maybe possibly going back to Miami Heat, which created a lot of talk.
No, not about him going back to the Heat. I mean, it's, you know, he's thinking out loud about the fantasy of him being able to play with Wade, Carmelo, Chris Paul, but, okay. You know, there's no time or place or city or team associated with that. It's an abstract kind of fantasy, and I don't think it's one that necessarily any of them think is likely to happen, certainly not happening anytime soon. And, you know, and the thought that LeBron shared on that was strictly coming out of our discussion about his friendship with Carmelo and the fact that since they were both 17 years old and when they first met, they've been talking about wanting to play together. So those doors all seem to keep closing because of choices that they've made over the course of their careers and some choices that Carmelo made in particular. And so my question to LeBron was simply about, hey, you know, it seems to me that Carmelo regrets not having that opportunity to play with you. And LeBron expanded on it and said, I'd like for all four of us to play. But I don't think there's no plan here. There's no, there's no wheels in motion. And the logistics in getting those four together are, you know, such a steep hill that it's just very unlikely.
How about the recent video that was shown with LeBron and D-Wade talking after the Heat, when they played the Heat, saying, you know, if this situation doesn't work out, I'll be back in Miami. So it kind of like, it's weird, like, you know, LeBron is saying all these things, and then at the same time, his teammates have to look at him maybe a different way. Like, really? Like, you know, why would you even say that?
I don't know of a video in which he's actually captured saying that. I mean, I know he was yucking it up with Wade at halftime during that loss a week or so ago, but I'm not aware of anything where he actually said anything.
Yeah, it came out today. The video came out today.
I haven't seen it. Sorry.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, my whole situation with the whole, if anything, where do you feel with, like, the Carmelo situation? Do you feel like Carmelo at the end of the season will try to make a move to play with LeBron, or you think he'll probably just stick it out in New York?
I think that Carmelo is doing everything possible or will try to do everything possible to stay in New York. I mean, you know, clearly he forced the trade here 5 years ago. And, you know, has gone through some ups and downs, more downs than ups. He re-signed anyway 2 summers ago for a near max deal. This is where he's wanted to be. And, you know, it hasn't been easy. I think to his credit, he's kept his head on straight. He hasn't lashed out. He's been, you know, he's kept his emotions mostly in check. You know, he's let it be known that he's frustrated, and who wouldn't be? But he's, you know, I think handled it really professionally and with a lot of class. So I think the question is, who's the next coach? Who do they sign in free agency this summer? Because they've got an opportunity this summer with a lot of cap room and, you know, an okay core, not a great core, but, you know, they did a good job of starting to get something together here. You've got, you know, Porzingis with all the promise in the world, Carmelo having a rebound season after knee surgery, and guys like Lopez. So, you know, free agents are going to look at this team as a more attractive destination, certainly this summer, than they did last summer. And if they get a couple of decent players and a new coach, you know, maybe they're back in playoff contention. And I think that would be enough for Carmelo to say, I'm sticking it out for now. I mean, he doesn't have to force a trade at this point, and I don't think he's given any indication that he has any desire to do so.
Howard, have you heard anything about potential candidates for the head coaching job in New York?
It's been pretty quiet. You know, I think Phil Jackson's wanted to give Kurt Rambis every opportunity to try to claim the job himself. That's not gone very well, clearly. You know, I do think that was his first thought was, you know, if things go well enough, maybe we just keep Kurt. And, you know, I still think that's at least a possibility because, you know, Rambis and Phil Jackson have a longstanding relationship and a trust, and they understand each other, and certainly Rambis runs Phil's system, and all those things are important to Phil Jackson. But if there's any sense that either the organization, ownership, fans, the team aren't on board with that, then they're going to have to look in a different direction. And, you know, I think it's probably where it's headed is that they have to go somewhere else. But there's no clear candidate at this point. And, you know, I'll be curious as anybody to see what they do.
Well, my whole problem with this doesn't spend money, but for some reason I think he doesn't want to spend this type of money now. He's already paying Phil $12 million. He's paying, you know, Fisher another $18 million. You know, either you come down or I'm pretty sure he doesn't want Kurt Rambis to be coaching because the way he's been coaching, you know, since he's taken over for Fish. But I feel like, you know, Dolan is kind of putting some type of pressure on Phil.
Well, I don't think money has ever been the object with Dolan. I mean, he's got a lot of faults as an owner, but you can never say it's being cheap. He's always been willing to spend, and I don't think they're going to, you know, care. I mean, they paid Larry Brown tens of millions just to go away and still turn around, you know, a couple of years later and hired Mike D'Antoni for $5, $6 million a year, whatever it was. I mean, I don't think money's going to get in the way of who they hire as a coach. I think it's more a matter of, you know, Phil Jackson at this point has kind of limited himself, handicapped himself by wanting to stay within his own family, by wanting to go with triangle guys or guys that he has worked with in the past or a guy like Derek Fisher who he had coached in the past. And so the circle of candidates seems kind of small. Now, that said, we've only seen him go through this once. Who knows? It may be a wider circle this time. The field of candidates may be much broader than we know, but we're not there yet because the season's not over yet and they haven't, you know, really started on that process. But I don't think it's going to be a matter of money. I think it's going to be a matter of who they can get. And I think Luke Walton would be, you know, certainly a strong candidate. There's no indication that Luke is wanting to leave the Warriors. You know, he might prefer to stay there as an assistant under Kerr for now. And he will, if he does want to leave and become the head coach immediately, Luke's going to have possibly better options because there's going to be, you know, at least a half dozen openings this summer. So, there's no clear-cut candidate at this point.
How fluid are they on the offense? You know, is the next coach going to be somebody? I know you say you didn't know who it was, but do you think Phil is going to, given the roster that he has, you think he's going to keep on with, you know, wanting to implement the triangle, or will he look at a guy like Thibodeau that might not favor the triangle, come in and want to do his own thing?
Well, Phil Jackson said it in his opening press conference 2 years ago, and he has said it when I sat down with him for, you know, an interview last year. He said many times that he uses the phrase system of basketball. He doesn't always say the triangle. He says he wants a system of basketball. And when I pressed him on that and said, you know, does it have to be the triangle, or could it be other systems that simply do what the triangle does, which is involve ball and player movement and, you know, kind of read and react and having a certain amount of balance? He has said yes. He said that he's more interested in something that simply, you know, mimics what his basketball roots are. You know, his basketball values were set in the early 70s, you know, late 60s, early 70s under Red Holtzman. They weren't running the triangle, the Knicks back then, but they were running an offense where everyone was involved. And that's really the most important principle at work here. And the triangle is one way of doing that. It's obviously Phil's preferred way of doing it. I do think he's open to other systems that do the same thing. He admires what the Warriors have done offensively. He admires the Spurs system. He admires the Hawks, who, of course, you know, run basically the Spurs system. So it's not that he's completely closed off to it. He just has a strong preference. Now, this time, given that there aren't that many triangle guys out there, and given that, you know, he may not get a Luke Walton, and who knows if Luke would want to run it anyway, he might have to go a different direction. So we'll see what happens there. But, you know, it's not going to be Thibodeau or anybody else off the Jeff Van Gundy tree, because that politically, I don't think the Garden, even if Phil weren't for team presidents, I don't think the Garden is interested in going with anybody on the Phil Jack on the Jeff Van Gundy tree, including Thibodeau, because there's political machinery at work here. And beyond that, yes, also Phil Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy are not exactly fond of each other, and I think that extends through other associations through each of them.
Hey, Howard, Ricky, I'm probably the only Nets fan on the air right now. And I know over a month ago you wrote an article that you didn't think the Nets would probably be in the position to win for a couple of years. That concerns me. And I feel like you know something that I need to know.
My condolences.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, don't hurt me too much, Hal. Don't hurt me too much. But tell me what you know.
Well, look, they made a really promising move in hiring Sean Marks from the Spurs. And, you know, it's great. You know, it's great to hire smart people from a smart organization, the best organization in the NBA. And if they can find a way to replicate anything the Spurs have done, great. But it still starts with players. And the Nets don't really have anyone to build around. You know, Brook Lopez keeps putting up big numbers, and they keep losing. And that's been the case, you know, I don't want to say, you know, entirely for the last several years, because they have obviously won some games, and they've won a playoff series. But Brook Lopez is not a guy to me you can build around, especially in today's NBA. He's a throwback player, you know, a big, slow-footed center who, while his offensive repertoire is fantastic, might be the most skilled scoring seven-footer in the league. You know, defensively, he's a problem. He's not reliable. And they don't have anybody else. Thaddeus Young should be basically your fourth or fifth best player. And Brook Lopez is probably best off as your third best player. And so they don't have somebody to build around. They need a franchise player. They don't have draft picks, so they're not going to get a franchise player in the draft. They have cap room, but so does the rest of the league. How are you going to attract somebody here? And, you know, look, I live down the street from Barclays Center. I love Brooklyn. It's a great place to live. I would hope that, you know, it's at least as attractive to free agents as New York, you know, as being in Manhattan or as L.A. or some of the other destinations across the country in the league. But guys want to win. And, you know, I don't know who they're attracting to this team, given how far they are from truly being a high-level team. I just think it's a really long, tough build they've got ahead of them without draft picks. And, you know, anything's possible, and they've got some smart people running it now. But I just don't see how they get there anytime soon.
Yeah, you're probably right. It hurts, but I'm keeping my fingers crossed, and hopefully that something will come good of it. And I also, before you leave, Howard, and I know you've been on the show before you leave, I had a conspiracy theory to support your article about the four amigos: LeBron, Wade, CP3, and Melo. Here was my thoughts. I'm thinking LeBron has a player option that he can get out of. Wade is unrestricted. Gabriel Union is in Hollywood. Melo's wife there is in L.A. That they all go join CP3 with Kobe leaving, and they redo L.A. That was my conspiracy, that they were going to all go and meet in L.A.
With the Lakers or the Clippers?
With the Clippers.
The Clippers don't have much in the way of cap room. The Lakers are going to have all kinds of cap room. So if there's a team that could absorb them, yeah, it might be the Lakers. But look, LeBron's not leaving Cleveland again, probably ever. Wade has said many times he's a Miami Heat guy for life. He's been his entire career. I think he wants to retire with the Heat. Nobody down there thinks he's ever leaving Miami again. Carmelo has made it pretty clear he wants to stick it out in New York. I think that there could come a breaking point for Carmelo if he doesn't see the chance to really contend. At some point, he may make that call, but I don't think he's there yet. I don't see it happening. It's certainly not happening this summer. It may not happen ever. I could see maybe at some point a couple of them getting together at some point. You know, maybe in the last year of Wade's career, because his is going to end the soonest of the four of them. And LeBron and Carmelo are the guys who have known each other the longest and have talked about playing together since they were 17. So if at some point Carmelo hit that breaking point, could Cleveland be the place that he wanted to go? As much as he wouldn't want to leave New York for Cleveland, and as much as his wife probably wouldn't want to leave New York for Cleveland, you know, maybe that's his ultimate solution if things don't go the way that he hopes in New York. But these are all hypotheticals and huge ifs, and I just don't think it's very likely we're going to see anything close to what LeBron outlined, which, as I say, I think was more fantasy than anything.
Hey, we'll see as the NBA turns. Hey, but how before you leave, how do you got a number of wins you think Golden State will get to? I like to always enter in the lottery. I could give you a good parting gift if you get it right. Total.
You know, I haven't
Golden
actually
State.
Looked to see. Yeah, I haven't looked at the Warriors. You know, whatever the last seven games or whatever it is. I mean, look, it's almost impossible now to think that they're not going to get the record. So, you know, whether they tie it at 72, whether they hit it at 73, could they even get to 74? I mean, there's nothing that there's nothing that surprised me at this point with these guys. I didn't think they would get this far, frankly, to be in this position. Not because of any doubts about their talent. I just figured at some point, fatigue, injuries, something, there's usually something that gets in the way. There have been other great teams, and the reason the teams don't routinely hit 70 wins is because you need more than talent. You need some good luck as well. They have had both, and they're in a position to do it. They clearly want it. They're not going to rest guys if it means sacrificing the chance to get 73. And, you know, look, they're determined. I think they're going to get it. And maybe they just hit 73 in the nose and then say, okay, we can take our foot off the gas for a sec.
Okay, 73 is your number. If we happy, Egg will be calling you, taking you out
sure.
to state.
I'll take that.
Hey, Howard Beck, thanks for joining us today on H2G Radio. We appreciate having you on.
Thanks, Howard. Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, Howard.
Howard Beck, Letter Bleacher Report. And are we going to get Mike James on the show as well?
I'm calling him now.
Okay, hopefully we get Mike, former NBA stud Mike James out of New York on the line with us here on H2G Radio. No commercials. Jared Rudolph, I'm looking at your Rockets right now. I'm looking at the Rockets. They look like they may have a little bit of a struggle. The Cavs look like they may be going through a little struggle. Houston is taking control of the ship.
Okay. Well, they're not my Cavs, but, I mean, they don't have LeBron, Houston should beat them.
Early on the show, you thought they were going to win.
What? Houston was down almost 20.
Right. I'm just saying the Cavs just didn't hold up. I just wanted to update you in case you weren't looking. I just wanted to give you an update.
I'm looking. I took my eye off when we were speaking to Howard. But the Cavs, the Rockets should win. The Cavs don't have LeBron. Ain't no reason for them to go into Cleveland and lose to these guys without LeBron. At all.
Well, they got Kyrie Irving, right?
Oh, come on,
They got love.
Yeah, we all got love.
They're supposed to be able to make some things happen. Hey, who's the most attractive free agent this year, Jared, that you see in the free agent market before we get Mike James on the line?
Kevin Durant.
Is it Kevin Durant, for sure.
Yeah, no questions, KD.
I'm almost thinking, I think it's almost a no-brainer that he signs back with Oklahoma City.
That's tough. I don't know KD personally. To sign long-term, you know, because he's going to get bread no matter where he goes. Right, and he's still young enough where after, if he takes a 3 or 4 year deal elsewhere, you know, he'll still have another big score. I think the risk for KD is if he signs a long-term deal with OKC, what's Russ going to do, right? I don't think you want to be stuck out there without Russ. You know, it's tough, but, I mean, he certainly is a game changer for any franchise he goes to. And I think of all the guys that are available, you know, obviously LeBron's, you know, one of those guys, you know, the two guys that are really worthy of a max, you know, especially a max at that magnitude. You know, you talk about guys, you know, touching $30 million. You know, KD, KD can get my money any day of the week, as can LeBron. But not, you know, I wouldn't stretch – Not for, you know, 4 or 5 years with LeBron. I think 3 years at a max because, you know, everyone slows down at some point. But, you know, Durant's the guy. You know, you get Durant, you know, and then, you know, things open up. I think guys will want to play with KD. I think he's the type of dude that a guy would take less to play with KD because, you know, you're going to have an opportunity to win because he gives you everything he got. And, you know, I think his best basketball is in front of him.
Is KD a guy that you take less to play with knowing that he's going to shoot most of the shots?
Nah, he's not a selfish player at all. If he was selfish, there'd be no Russell Westbrook. So no, he's not a selfish ball player at all. I think he does a much better job of being well rounded. But no, he's not a selfish ball player. You can't let Russ live.
Russ, but he's not really letting Russ live because Russ has the ball all the time.
Let me tell you something, man. If KD decided that he wanted to take 30 shots a game and Russ shots come down, Russ shots are coming down. Okay, that KD. He understands that Russ is a phenomenon and a great player all his own. So he doesn't have a problem sharing the wealth. But that's KD's thing, man. That's KD's thing. I mean, Russ is Robin to KD's Batman, but it's still called the Batcave. Like, he's not a selfish guy. If he was a selfish, insecure guy, yeah, they would have either got Russ up out of there or, you know, you would hear complaints about Russ being used the wrong way. Okay, he's not a selfish guy. He you know, and Russ has the talent now. You know, KD's not playing for him, but that's KD's show.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I agree with you. It's definitely KD's show, but I think Russell Westbrook has emerged into a serious superstar that I'm almost thinking it may be more of KD's show. It may be more Westbrook's show out there in OKC now.
Okay, I disagree.
But I mean, give or take, whoever you be. Durant is definitely a great player. But I also, when that free agent moves, although he's been a little bit quiet, but I like Andre Drummond coming out this year.
He's not leaving Detroit.
You don't think he packs it up and leaves there?
No, he'll sign back with Detroit. He's a restricted free agent. He ain't going nowhere.
I wonder if he gets an offer on the outside. Well, Detroit should be able to max it with the new payrolls and everything. So he's probably staying solid. What about your guy, Dwight? You think he uses his player option to get out?
No comment.
Okay. We'll keep that one quiet. Hassan Whiteside, he stays in Miami or he goes?
No, I think he, you know, he's gonna have some nice money out there waiting for him.
Definitely had a great season.
Yeah, he's just, you know, the upside on that kid is, you know, you can keep his head straight. You know, it's tremendous. You know, this guy's getting triple-double with blocks. Great rebounder, great shot blocker, and you can develop the offense. He's getting stronger. You know, he's coming into his own. The problem is, you know, centers like Whiteside, you know, you got to find teams for them where they fit, where they're going to use them the way they're supposed to be used. And you get so many people caught up now and trying to keep up with the Joneses and, you know, essentially eliminate, you know, the prototypical back-to-the-basket center that, you know, he has to be very, very careful that he doesn't just go for a money grab. You want to make sure that you position yourself to, one, get paid, two, to be able to perform so that you can get paid again. And, you know, you look around and, you know, he has to be really, really careful about what team he goes to. There's a lot of teams out there where they could use a guy like Whiteside, but again, got to have his head on straight.
No doubt, man. And I think we're having some trouble getting to Mike James right now. Edgar, you still there with us? I know he's behind the scenes trying to get Mike James to the line, but, and Jared, if I had to say for this year in the NBA, as it's about to close down, if we had to put together the hard to guard honor roll, who would be your leading choice for coach of the year?
Yeah, no doubt it's Steve Kerr, or a combination of Kerr and Luke Walton. But, you know, look, you got a team that's about to break the all-time record. There's, you know, really no other option. I think Popovich is always in it because if he wanted to push for 70, they had a shot. But now it's got to be the guys out of Golden State.
You think, even though it kind of was running like a machine,
that's not without coaching, brother. You know, that's not without coaching. That's not without coaching at all. You know, everyone's playing their part out there.
Well, yeah, everybody's playing their role. I think they have some pieces that definitely fit in place. But in that case, then Luke Walton should be getting for a head coaching job.
Yeah, I think he will.
You know, I'm impressed with Donovan. I'm impressed with Billy Donovan. I'm impressed with him stepping into that situation.
I don't know how. I mean, what's to be impressed with? What's he doing that's so impressive?
Oklahoma City, I believe, last year didn't make the play.
Yeah, that's because KD was hurt, man.
He hurt for a big part of the season. But then
he's hurt for the majority of the season.
They're fighting as they're like the number three seed in the West right now.
Yeah, but when you lose Kevin Durant for the majority of the season, you're not going to make the playoff. I mean, Russ did his thing, but no, Scott Brooks shouldn't have got fired. He didn't break KD's foot.
No, he didn't. I mean, the termination of Scott Brooks was a terrible decision. Just like I say, the termination of Black was a bad decision as well.
Hiring Black was a bad decision.
I don't know. They're in the NBA Finals under Black. They made it to the NBA Finals.
There's a lot to do with LeBron.
I think we give him if LeBron's going to take all the credit, he got to take all the responsibility when it doesn't go right.
Okay, I can live with that. I mean, that's how it was in the old days, and that's how it was in the old school anyway. You know, Patrick Ewing. You know, he takes the blame for the Knicks not being able to beat Jordan, but no one ever talked about the fact that, Starks was a serviceable guard who had great moments, but he certainly wasn't a great guard. Get the guy a great guard, maybe he can beat Mike.
Well, no, Starks was a streaky player, and I think who benefited from the presence of Patrick Ewing.
They all did, right? But when you look at, the one time they make it to the finals, or they get past, they really should have lost to the Bulls that year, but you get past the Bulls and then you run into the Houston Rockets team that has Clyde and Akeem. You know, it's just Patrick. And Starks is playing his role and he's getting hot, but, Patrick, if Patrick wasn't creating for those guys, nothing was going on. So the other star of the team was Pat Riley. There was never another lead guy to help Patrick out, right? Same thing with Charles. He's losing the mic. There's never a lead guy to help him out. Reggie, there's never another lead guy to help him out. So, yeah, these guys, Reggie takes the blame for not getting it done in Indiana. Patrick's going to take the blame for not getting it done in New York. Charles takes the blame for not getting it done in Philadelphia and Phoenix. It's just the way it goes. So if LeBron in Cleveland doesn't get it done, yeah, he is the mayor. He gets it. He gets the blame, and I think he can live with that. Most people don't understand it's really not his fault. It's a team game, but yeah, he can live with that.
Indeed, man. Hey, Jared, I know you're not really much of a college basketball guy, but at this time of the year, I would think as a basketball guy, you're tuned in to the Final Four. Did
I
make a mistake?
This weekend. I watched this weekend.
You haven't watched up until this weekend.
Not intensely, no. I was really more interested in Batman versus Superman when it came out.
Okay. Well,
but in the
Final Four, you have North Carolina. You have versus Syracuse. You have Oklahoma versus Villanova. Now, not many people expected Villanova to be there. Three number one seeds got ousted. North Carolina, the only number one seed to still be in there. Syracuse, Cinderella team, back in it without Melo. Jimmy Boeheim coached a hell of a game last game. Any predictions in those matchups that you may have, Jared, just on history alone, not even knowing the team,
just
on history?
You know, Boeheim's a great coach. The zone, you know, he's been here before. I want to say this is his sixth time. So, you know, he'll have something up his sleeve. I really, really like the Buddy Hield kid. And in the NCAA tournament, you got to have great guard play to be successful. This kid at 37, you know, to get him to the Final Four. I don't think that, you know, but he's been streaky. You know, he's had great games, and he's had games of 6 or 8 points. You know, if he does what he's been doing, you know, Oklahoma's going to be tough to beat. You know, it's tough to stop that one guy. Clearly, he's a pro. He's tough, man. So if he can play, you know, he doesn't have to have 37, but if he can, you know, be around 25, 30 points and everyone else just does their job, they're a tough team to beat. So, I really like Oklahoma. You have to have great guard play during the tournament to, you know, deal with the various zone defenses. And Oklahoma certainly has that with Buddy. So that's my pick coming out.
Love your picks. I'll go with them. I believe we have Mark Berman from the New York Post on the line with us. Mark Berman, you on the air?
I'm here.
How you doing, Mark? Welcome to Hard to Guard Radio.
Doing great. I'm in Dallas.
We're in the fourth quarter. We're in the fourth quarter right now, Mark. We were talking a lot about Knicks, Nets stuff, and we just got into college basketball, talking about the Final Four. Have you followed the college basketball tournament, NCAA tournament, up to this point?
The Knicks' schedule has been so busy. They've been playing on so many of those nights. It's been very difficult. I am rooting for Syracuse, just being from New York. And, I'd like to see Carmelo have some joy in his life because we're around him every day. And sometimes it's very difficult to be around him. But he really... he's really connected to the program, and he's taking a great deal of pleasure in this unlikely run.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. And talking with Melo as you cover in the Knicks, as he offered anything, I'm sure he's been very excited about this whole Syracuse run because I think it's delighted us all as fans.
I mean, when the tournament started, obviously Syracuse was considered a big long shot to do anything, and from the very get-go, he predicted a Sweet 16 berth and an upset of Michigan State, although that matchup never materialized. But then after that, he continued and said we're going to the Final Four. I mean, he's been very confident, said he's had a feeling about this team. And, you know, he called them in their locker room after the stunning rally against Virginia and spoke to a couple of the players and spoke to Boeheim and the coaches. So he was actually in New Orleans at the time of that game, and New Orleans is the site of where Syracuse won their only NCAA championship.
Mark, you've been around the Knicks such a long time. Tell us a little bit about your feeling in terms of what they're going to do, free agent targets, coaching targets. What direction do you think this franchise wants to go in, if they even have a plan moving forward?
Well, Phil is very close to the vest, and I do know that Rambis, it's probably 50-50 now. I thought his chances would have been very good to stick around if the team had success. He's 7-14 right now. It's just a very small pool of candidates when you're talking about Phil wanting to stick with the triangle. I mean, he has tremendous respect for Brian Shaw, probably would have hired Shaw over Derek Fisher had Shaw not been working for Denver. Luke Walton seems like a big long shot, and plus you have to wait till June. David Blatt is a candidate only because Steve Mills has pushed for him. They share the backcourt in Princeton. It's a little bit of a mystery how outside his little circle he wants to go. I've been told from the get-go, don't expect Tom Thibodeau to really get an interview. Phil has a lot of friends still in Chicago in the front office, the Paxson brothers, and he's heard some very bad stories about Thibodeau and how he's very stubborn and he doesn't like minutes restrictions from the training staff. And that's something the Knicks have a very intensive training staff. So I know Phil wants Rambis to have success and keep him around and keep that triangle around, but it's not working right now.
Well, my thing is with the whole Phil thing, you know, I was saying earlier about James Dolan. I think that James Dolan doesn't want to bring in a new coach and pay another $6-7 million on a brand new coach. You know, he's already paying Phil $12 million. He's giving, you know, Derek Fisher $18 million. You know, in his mind, even though, you know, we know Dolan will spend money, but, you know, obviously he's like, I'm pretty sure he has people in his ear like, come on, another $7 million on a coach for how many years? He doesn't even know how long Phil is going to be here.
I think it's a fair point. I think Dolan was surprised that Phil had a quick hook with Fisher. I don't think he does want to spend a lot of money on a marquee coach. I think Dolan feels he's got two marquee players on the roster selling tickets in Carmelo and Kristaps and a marquee president in Phil Jackson. I don't think Dolan feels he needs a big name, but you know, Dolan could also be wondering, you know, is Rambis going to make anything better next season because it looks all the more the same. But, you know, the point is the Knicks need better players. Listen, in July when the Knicks had their minus free agent crop, you know, I wrote, you know, in a worst-case scenario, I said, boy, you know, this roster has the smell of an expansion roster a little bit. And, you know, they were 22-22 in mid-January with some really good teamwork. But guys like Derek Williams and Lance Thomas and Langston Galloway, these guys are important bench pieces that wouldn't not be in rotations for most very good NBA teams. So there was a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a fluke that they were a 500 team for so long. But, yeah, no, you make the point about Dolan not wanting to spend on a marquee coach, and I agree with that.
Yeah, and the whole Melo situation, I feel like Melo's going to wait it out in July just to see what type of moves they make, and then he's going to make his move.
Yeah, logistically, as I wrote in a story I filed this afternoon, you know, Melo, again, talking about the Olympics and how he's still gung-ho about playing the Olympics despite Chris Paul's defection. Logistically, if he's going to make a trade demand, it would probably be in, like, late July after Phil's done with free agency and Carmelo is disappointed. I mean, I see a scenario if Phil really craps out in free agency where Carmelo makes a trade demand. But logistically, he's going to be starting his long run with the Team USA. The aggravation and the distraction of wondering where he's going to play next season is not something he wants. It's definitely not the scenario he's looking for. He's hoping things work out. And I think he's going to roll with it and see what happens next season. And then there's next trade deadline. If the Knicks are looking like they're out of the playoffs, that's when Carmelo says, get me out of here.
Mark, do you think there's any chance that, you know, Phil and the Knicks would approach Melo and ask him to waive his no trade so they can move forward?
I mean, I honestly believe that Phil is indifferent, meaning he could trade him, he could keep him. He said something similar entering that free agency. There was a little get-together with the writers, and he made a remark. It's like, if Carmelo wants to re-sign, we're happy as hell. But if he wants to sign somewhere else, we'll be fine with it. And I feel that Phil feels that way right now. I think he could go either way on it. I don't think he would approach Carmelo. I think he needs Carmelo to come to him. He wants to trade Carmelo if Carmelo doesn't want to be here. Steve Mills does not want players who don't want to be here. And they feel they had a nice group this year, a lot of guys who signed here, who wanted to be here. I don't think that's the case for everybody anymore, especially Aaron Aflalo. But it's important to Phil and it's important to Steve that these guys want to be in New York, and they still feel Carmelo wants to be in New York. He wants it to work out. This is his hometown. This is the place he chose. This is the place where he knows if he wins, his, you know, career and legacy takes on a whole new level.
And on the free agent front, obviously Melo said that he's going to be in the forefront of it, helping trying to lure free agents here. What's the chances of, I doubt that Kevin Durant's going to come here, plus the Knicks only have, as of now, only $18 million available, and then hopefully if Aaron Nafalo opts out and Derek Williams opts out, it could go up to $30 million. But, and then if Aaron Nafalo opts out, you know, they're talking about Evan Turner, who I think is almost the same type of player as Aaron Nafalo. But what do you think the chances of the Melo effect in free agency?
Yeah, I think he wants to be in the meetings. You know, he knows Kevin Durant for a long time and knows him very well. And I honestly believe that Kevin is going to give the Knicks an audience. Kevin Durant's father is a big Knicks fan. He's got a support system in New York, his agents, and some a lot of friends here. I think that Derek Fisher being fired is gonna cost them Kevin Durant. I don't know if he would have come anyway, but I knew that was definitely a pull. But yeah, Carmelo, listen, and we'll see what happens with LeBron. If you know LeBron's gonna opt out and probably re-sign with Cleveland, unless things become a disaster in the playoffs, and then you know no one wants to believe it, but LeBron obviously loves Carmelo and he loves Madison Square Garden, and he may think that this is the worthy mission. I always thought that LeBron would break the city's championship curse in Cleveland and then move on to his next mission. And I thought the next mission was either getting the Lakers back to their glory days or coming to New York City. But, again, Carmelo has to be part of these free agent meetings because he has to show that he wants to be here. That's another thing when they recruit free agents. A free agent might say, well, does Carmelo even want to be here? So he's got to be in the meeting saying, this is the place to go. Kristaps Porzingis is going to be a great player. We have a young point guard in Grant. We got some other character guys on this club. It's still going to be a tough sell.
Hey, Mark, man, I appreciate you coming on, man.
Hey, no problem, guys. I appreciate having me on.
Take care.
Edgar B., this is that comes that time in the show where we must say goodnight.
Yeah, and Mike James just texted me.
Tell Mike James, man, see him in Pro City or something.
Yeah.
No, hopefully he can join the show next week. Hopefully we get Stephon Marbury. I'm sure Jared Rudolph will be very energized. I didn't even want to say nothing to him earlier when he tried to put Steph and LeBron in the same category. I was going to take a page out of his own chat.
I never tried to put Steph and LeBron in the same category.
You snuck that one in.
No, I did not. I absolutely
I'm
did
let
not.
You, I'm going to let
Steph,
you slide.
But Steph is my
–
but listen, there's no bigger Steph guy than
I know that.
Not
I
Nate
know
Marbury
that.
To
hey,
me. That's my guy.
When you edit the footage, please send him that 10 seconds when he tried to put Steph – and LeBron in the same chatter. He stopped the whole show before when we tried to compare somebody to Michael Jordan.
Yeah,
he stopped the entire show.
That didn't happen. We even discussed that. That didn't come up tonight.
But he just tried to speak in a Steph and LeBron comparison in the same sentence. Even though I love Steph, Vaseline and Steph, I like Steph.
Yeah, that didn't happen. I don't recall that at all.
Give us 10 seconds, man. All right, Jared.
Next week.
I'll talk to you. Next week, we are. Cool.